Welcome to the National Federation of the Blind's 2025 Senior Retreat, a time for empowerment, connection and growth. A special thanks to Janie Degenshain, Zoom administrator, and her team for a seamless retreat. Your dedication makes this event possible. Thank you for joining us on this journey.
Our house is a very, very, very fine house with two cats in the yard. Life used to be so hard. Now everything is easy because of you.
Else, this afternoon, we're going to be talking about taking care of your home physically, and that is doing light maintenance. And many blind people do that. We can do it non-visually. And this gentleman who I'm going to introduce as soon as he gets on is very good at this. He's done a lot of projects around his house. In fact, I don't know, he can do just about anything he needs to do in terms of maintaining his home. And he's going to share some of that with us and answer your questions and so on. He's really, really good at it. And he has a lot of experience doing it. I do most of the maintenance around our house, light maintenance. If I need to change a light switch or an wall outlet or have a clogged drain or any of that stuff, I do pretty much all of that myself. Not only does it save me some money, but I really don't like to wait on service people. When I have a problem, I don't like to wait for them. And very often when you call them, they're very busy, of course. So they'll be by in a couple of days to unclog your commode, for example. We're going to get him on. But if you have a few very inexpensive hand tools, you can do a lot of things around your home for yourself, and it's very helpful and very useful. And again, a lot of blind people do those things. You don't have to be able to see to do them. So as soon as we get Mark on, he will. We'll introduce him and we'll get underway. Has anybody on the call tried to do any maintenance around your home?
Are you able to hear me?
Hey, there he is.
Okay, yep. I called in by phone. I couldn't get myself to unmute through the computer.
Okay, Mark. First of all, everybody, this is a gentleman who is a friend of mine and who can do just about anything anybody can around your home. So, Mark, I'm going to give you the floor. You can say howdy to everybody and tell everybody who you are.
Okay. Well, good afternoon, everyone. It's a pleasure for me to be with you. And it sounds like when I called in, there's a large number of people on this call, so that's always good, too. And just like to give you a little bit of heads up that we're going to talk for just a little bit, but then open some things for questions. So be thinking about any questions that you might want to ask when we get to that point. But yes, I am a friend of Glenn's, and he's asked me to be a participant in this retreat for the last number of years, and I'm always happy to do so because I do enjoy home improvement projects and doing things around the house for a number of reasons. It can be a money saver to be able to do things yourself, but the other thing is nice that you don't have to wait for somebody to come and take care of it. So, and liking to do these types of things also helps. So with that said, as luck would have it, I just got into having to replace a kitchen faucet yesterday. So there's never a shortage of things that need to be done around the house, and they always pop up when you least expect them, but it's nice to have the tools and somewhat of the expertise to take care of those. But one of the first things that I like to share with people is just because you've lost your sight doesn't mean that you can't do a lot of the things around the house that you did do. And, you know, if you never did them before, then that obviously makes it somewhat of a challenge. But if these are things that you've ever done in the past, there's no reason to say that you can't do them again just because you can't see what you're doing. You know, I did mention that I'm just replaced the kitchen faucet in our house, and you can't see under there anyway. The things are in there where you got to do everything by feel regardless. So even if you've got a sighted plumber, he's not seeing what he's doing. He's reaching in and feeling around and doing everything by feel. So once again, sight is not a benefit when it comes to that. But some of the basics that come down to doing home improvement projects are, you know, having some tools. And you don't really need to invest a whole lot of money in a tool kit to have around your house. As most people started, and I started years ago, I got my first tool kit when I was in high school, and have just added to it, you know, pieces here and there over the years as a need has arisen. But, you know, if you go to your local hardware store or Lowe's, Home Depot, someplace like that, and just talk to them about just a very basic, you know, home tool kit, you know, maybe some screwdrivers, a couple wrenches, maybe just an adjustable wrench, a pair of pliers, and just the very basic things that you need to do stuff that's that pops up from time to time around the house. And you know, a basic toolkit like that won't cost you a great deal of money. And then you add to it as time goes on, as a project comes up and you realize you don't have the tool that it's going to require to do the job, that's when you go out and you buy that one tool that you need for that job, and that just grows your toolkit. And, you know, hopefully at some point you get to the point where almost anything that pops up, you've got the toolkit right there to take care of what's in front of you. But, you know, there are things, like I said, I enjoy doing home improvement projects. I'm not sure, you know, obviously we've got a wide variety of people on this call. So how much you all enjoy doing home improvement projects, it's going to vary from person to person. But most of it's just working with your hands. You know, feeling your way around. You don't really need to know sizes of things. Most of it's, you know it needs to be bigger or smaller. You don't really need to know that it's 9/16 of an inch, that type of thing. Measuring tools, from time to time, there's things you're going to need to measure on house. Say you're putting up a picture and you want to center it on the wall. You know, there are ways that, you know, you could measure that. Most people, you know, would pull out a tape measure and know, you know, take a measurement. But many cases, you're trying to center it between two things. So you don't necessarily need to know what the exact measurement is. You just need to have some way of transferring that measurement into what you're doing. So, for example, you could take a string and pull it and just, you know, keep your fingers where, you know, the ends of the limits of what you're measuring for. So you don't know that it's, you know, 36 inches. You just know here's how far it is from point A to point B. And in many cases, that's all that's really needed. You don't really need to know what the actual measurement is. But if it does come down to it that you're doing some things that you do need to know the measurements, there are some tools out there that do make that possible. There's talking tape measures. There is something called a click rule, which is a tactile product for measuring things. These things are typically accurate or measured to the 16th of an inch, and I find them fairly accurate to do most of the things that you would need to do. The downside, like you're probably finding on most things, accessible tools or accessible products that we're using do come with a price tag. And that is unfortunate, but if it's something that you do feel like you have a need to use from time to time, it can be a worthwhile investment. And I do know some people that they put that on the gift list every year for birthdays and Christmas and anniversaries and things like that, of another tool that they would love to have that they may not want to go out and buy themselves, but would just put it on that list for somebody to get them when that birthday or whatever comes up. So that's kind of just the basics starting on. I know, Glenn, I just came in here. I got in here a little bit late because of the challenges getting unmuted. So is there anything right off the bat, Glenn, that you would like to discuss before we go on further?
Well, first, you mentioned tools, and I would just wanted to say, like for screwdrivers around your home, for example, most screwdrivers that you're going to need around your house are fairly standard in the sense that there's probably two or three different sizes. And if you just get a simple set of screwdrivers, probably that little set is going to contain most of the screwdrivers you're ever going to need. Now, that doesn't mean that you're not going to find that oddball somewhere, because you will. But Mark explained it well, that, you know, a set of tools generally for your home. It doesn't have to break the bank, but if you like tools, I like to tease. I say, well, I could complete this job if I could go back to the hardware store and find that perfect tool. And I say that because I love to go and shop and find a tool I don't have and buy it for whatever excuse. And I'll use an excuse to do it. But I don't know, Mark, you mentioned replacing a faucet. Very often that is, that's a common thing to do. And perhaps you might explain just generally how you replace a kitchen faucet or a bathroom faucet.
Well, certainly. And before I go into that, let's talk a little bit about the tools. One thing it's good to know, too, is you don't necessarily need to have the tools today, but just keep in mind that hardware stores frequently put things on sale. So it's nice to keep your eye on something. So there may be a set of screwdrivers or a set of wrenches that you'd like to have, but you don't want to pay the price they're asking for it right now. Quite often they'll put it on sale. So if you just kind of keep your eye on it, and when the sale hits, that's the time to go get it. So keep that in mind. And the other thing that it's a good point, and it can be a frustration point. I have found like the large box stores, the Home Depots and the Lowe's of this world, yeah, they've got large selections of things, but they're not a wealth of information. They have the product somewhere in the store, but sometimes it can be difficult finding somebody that can explain certain things to you or can answer your questions. So I really have gotten to where I like the local hardware store, Joe's Hardware. You can't ask for better, because quite often there are people that are retired that work in there as a part-time job, and they've got a wealth of knowledge in their head. So you can go in with a project that you're not really sure how you may tackle it or what tool it may take to do it. But if you go in and talk to somebody there, a lot of times they can say, oh, I know exactly what you need for that. And they can take you down on aisle three. We'll find the exact tool you're looking for. And then they can explain to you how you do it. And here's the parts you need. And here's what you, here's step one, step two, step three. So I was just in the hardware store yesterday. I had to go and pick up actually another wrench I needed to replace the kitchen faucet. As luck would have it, I had the wrenches that were sized to do what I needed to do, but under the kitchen sink, it's very tight quarters, and the wrench that I had was too long, so I couldn't get it where I needed to go because it was hitting the side of the cabinet. So I needed to go get a shorter wrench that would be able to get in and do what I needed to do. So, as I was saying earlier, that's how you expand your toolkit. Wasn't planning on buying it, but I did go to the hardware store, and I had an 8-inch adjustable wrench, and now I have a 4-inch adjustable wrench. So it did the exact thing what I needed it to do, took care of the project, and killed two birds with one stone, and I now have another tool in my toolkit. So, don't ever underestimate the knowledge that's at the hardware store. Like I said, the big box store you may not find, because a lot of times there are people there that are just clerks that are working. They were just looking for a paycheck, and they don't really have the expertise or the knowledge. But if you do go into the local hardware store, a lot of times you do find people that are, a retired plumber or a retired electrician that was just looking for, a part-time paycheck or just something to do with his time now that they're retired. And, they're just a wealth of information. So, and a lot of them love to talk. So when you go in the hardware store, be prepared to spend a little bit of time. I like to talk too, so that's never been a problem. But getting into the kitchen faucet replacement, relatively easy. And like most things these days, a lot of products we don't repair much anymore. Most things are now replacement. It's now become too costly to repair something because of labor costs, so it's just cheaper to throw it away and get a new one. And I don't really like that mindset, because for most things, the product itself is still in pretty good shape. It's just, one part's worn out, and that's all you need to replace, but unfortunately, you can't find that anymore. So now it's come down to you take the old one out, you put a brand new one in, and you're good to go. So in a lot of cases, and in this case with the kitchen faucet, a lot of that is just, taking your hands and feeling the connections that are there. Typically, it's a hose with a fitting on the end that has to be unscrewed and taken apart. There's, a bolt at the top where it mounts to the bottom of the cabinet. So it's just a matter of feeling around there. As I mentioned earlier, you can't see it anyway. It's in such a position that you have to just reach in there and feel your way around. That you know, sight doesn't do anybody any good in that situation. You just can't get in there. But in my case, to replace this kitchen faucet, it was a matter of just taking a few things apart, pulling it apart, and saying, okay, here's, you know, it was basically two bolts that took the whole thing apart. Once I got that out and finally got the right wrench to get to it, everything worked fairly smoothly. But one thing you will find too, especially if you're dealing with an older house, when you go and buy new items, quite often they've been upgraded. So the connections may not be exactly like they were before. And that led me to the next step was, okay, I need some information. This part's different than the one that's on the old faucet. So why is this different? Or you know, do I need to use the new part? Do I reuse the old part? What do I do with this? Another wealth of information is YouTube. There are YouTube videos for everything. I mean, even down to not just repairing a kitchen faucet, but you can find replacing a kitchen faucet and a specific model number. So there's lots of things that you can find as far as that's concerned. One negative I have found as far as YouTube videos are concerned, quite often they are visual in nature as well, where the person doing the video say, well, you take this piece here and you move it over there and whatever. So if you can't see what they're doing, sometimes they're not as helpful as they might be. But in some cases, they are really explaining it, especially if it's working on a product that you have to do by feel anyway. So, and short of that, having a neighbor or a friend, a colleague that can stop by and help you take a look at something, explain what a certain piece is, you know, never underestimate that too. Don't be afraid that, you know, oh, I have to do this totally independently. I can't ask questions or whatever, because you know, that's just handcuffing yourself on getting the project done in time. So when all else fails, I've got a good friend that lives just a few blocks away from me, and he, like me, likes doing things around his house. He has a whole bunch of tools, so whenever I'm kind of stumped on something, I'll give him a call and say, hey, Larry, here's the project that I'm working on, and I can't get the wrench in there. It's just too long. Do you have anything short? He goes, oh, yeah, I had that same problem 2 years ago. I've got exactly what you need. So, you know, once again, it's just analyzing the project that you're dealing with. Find out, you know, what's in front of you, what do you need to do, and just don't be afraid to take it on. One thing many people have, and I had this problem to a certain point when I was losing my sight, I was afraid to start projects because I wasn't sure how I was going to complete them. So you get into that total procrastination, and that's a bad place to be. I found if I can force myself to get started, I'll actually get the project done. Whereas if I just sit here and try and analyze it until I know exactly how everything's going to work, unfortunately, a lot of times you'll never get to it because you'll keep coming up with more questions than you have answers. And that leads you to, well, I can't do this, so I need to call a plumber. I need to call somebody to do this. Once again, nothing wrong with calling the plumber, but be prepared this day and age that you might get sticker shock when the plumber gives you the bill, that everything, as you know, everything's gone up in price. So that's all consideration as to whether I tackle the project or not. So with that said, hopefully that answers a little bit of those questions, but what I'd like to do is just open up and see what questions people have, any projects they have around their house that they're working on, or any things that we might be able to provide a little bit of insight to. And as usual, those questions tend to ask lead to more questions. So happy to answer or attempt to answer any questions anybody might have.
Excuse me again. This is Eureka.
Hey, Eureka. How are you?
Hey, Mark. I'm doing okay. My question is some years ago, a friend of mine gave me a toolkit for my for Christmas, and it was like a, you know, ladies' toolkit. Mm-hmm. So it was a smaller or lighter weight tool, but they did the same stuff. So do they still sell those kind of tools? Because my daughter, when she was little, she would go in there and I would be missing tools and everything. So do they still sell tools, like, you know, does, you know, if a lady, you know, need to want to go fix something right quick or whatever, sell them in the way that they can handle?
Yep, absolutely. And you also hit on one of the age-old problems. When people borrow tools or want to play with your tools and don't put them back where they belong, and then next time you need it, you can't find it. So that's a pet peeve of everybody. Every handyman or anybody who has tools has that thing. It needs to be put back where it was, because you know it's always the one that you need that you can't find. But certainly, yeah, there's starter toolkits. Basically, if you go to any home any hardware store, or if you went to Lowe's or Home Depot, there's basic starter kits. Some people I've seen actually give them as housewarming gifts to people, because it's ideal. You now own a house, there are going to be things that are going to pop up. So that's not uncommon for them to have just a very, very basic toolkit that, as Glenn was mentioning before, you know, you get a few screwdrivers, you get adjustable wrench, you get a pair of pliers, and, you know, that's a basic kit that gets you started, and it'll tackle many things around the house. It may not be the perfect tool that you need for everything, but in most cases, it will get you started. But that's one of the things that you need to instill in the people around the house is, you can use my tools, but just make sure you put them back where you found them.
So, Mark, I would also add to what you just said. If you like to shop in, especially these independent hardware stores, very often they have a table they call a clearance table. And on that table is an assortment of various tools. There won't be many copies of any one tool, but there'll be an assortment of tools they've lowered the price on. When I go there, I check them all out, because usually I find one or two that I just have to have.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, we've all got our wish list. Yeah.
Hey, this is Brian.
Yes.
Yeah, I'll come right to the point. On changing electrical sockets or light switches, what method do you use to make sure that you know which one is the black wire, the white wire, and the green wire? I guess you know that what happens if you don't.
Of course, if you're connecting, yeah, you can short some things out if you get them connected incorrectly. The one thing to keep in mind when you're replacing, like, an old switch that's gone bad and you're just replacing it with a new switch, in many cases, you don't need to know which one's the black and the white, because you just need to replace, you know, equal for equal. So when you take things apart, you need to pay very close attention as to where it came from and where it's going to go back. And in some cases, you may want to take a piece of tape or like a tie wrap that holds a loaf of bread closed, that type of thing, and put it around one of the wires just to designate it as, you know, a specific wire. But once again, I wouldn't get too caught up in what the color of the wire is, because if it was wired properly before, if you put them back in the correct location on the new switch, everything's going to work just fine. But that's a good question, because a lot of people go, well, I can't see the black and the white one, so how can I do this? Very good question.
And then on the lines of the wiring, in DC circuits, what method do you use to make sure that you know a difference between a positive and a negative?
In DC circuitry?
Uh-huh.
I actually have done very little. Yeah, I've done
like
very little.
Like car batteries.
Yeah, exactly. Cars obviously become important. Now, actually, cars now have gotten so crazy since the last time I purchased a car. It's been many, many years. So I joke with people now, I would be so lost buying a new car these days, because, heck, they don't even use keys anymore. But in many cases, for example, when you're hooking up the terminals on the battery of a car, there's a positive and a negative there. Well, they're typically not the same size, okay, for that reason. Like, one may be red, one may be black, but you can't see the color. But typically, the positive is larger than the negative. Okay, so you can, once again, you can tell by just the feel of it rather than having to see what you're doing. So, and once again, if you're replacing parts, it's just important that you reconnect it the way it came apart. So, once again, there's no shortage of paying attention when you're disassembling things. You know, when you take parts off, you want to make sure that you put them in a good spot. Perhaps laid them out in a certain location just to make sure, okay, this is the one that went on the bottom left, this is the one that went to the top right, that type of thing. Something that can be very helpful in doing that, especially if they're relatively small parts, is have a container with you. Even something like an egg crate, an egg carton, can be very handy because it's got, you know, 12 compartments that you can put little screws in, nuts in, and things like that. So that way you know this is the small nut, and you can put it in the upper right corner, and that way you know you're putting the one right back where it came from. If you just put them in a pile, then all of a sudden, if you're not paying attention, you'll realize, uh-oh, I didn't pay attention when I took this apart, and I'm not sure which one goes where. And if you're like me, that's when a little minor panic starts to set in. So you learn most of these things through trial and error, that you've done it, and you realize, okay, don't do it that way again. Pay very close attention when you're taking it apart.
Very good. We have Musi with a hand raised.
Yeah. Okay. I hope you can answer this. You know, my big thing is plugging things into the wall, the outlet. And tell me why it has to go in a certain way. And so I put the bump stop on what is to be the top. The bump stop falls off and I can't you know, it's treacherous trying to plug things in. I mean, I hope you understand what I'm asking.
Well, I do know what you're saying. In most outlets these days, in modern electrical fixtures, you can't plug things in incorrectly. You'll notice, like, if you've got a two-prong plug, one is a little bit larger than the other. So it's impossible for you to plug it in incorrectly. Sometimes you will see plugs that have one prong turned 90 degrees to the other. That can be for a 20-amp outlet, because some products, not necessarily lamps or anything like that, but if you had, say, power tools that do require heavier amounts of electricity, they require a 20-amp circuit in order to use it. And so, therefore, the plug is made differently, so you can't inadvertently plug it into the wrong outlet.
Well, now, am I right? Some of those power surge protectors, you know, those things with the multiple plugs, some of them are not straightforward. Like you say, you have to twist them to plug it in, right? They're very, you know what I'm talking about? A power surge thing.
Some of them let you rotate it so that if you have like a sideways wall wart.
Why?
So you have more control over how you're stacking them on your power surge.
It's a design thing. I thought it had something to do with electricity. I'm terrified of electricity, by the way. So keep talking.
As long as you don't have your finger on the metal, you know, don't be afraid of it.
And a lot of times they have those things that can turn like that because you're not just plugging in a plug. Sometimes with these things you're plugging in, they have like a little converter on the end of the plug. So it's like a little box that's there. And so therefore you can't plug two beside each other because they're just too fat. So in some cases they can be rotated so you can get more things there. But rest assured, most things, especially anything that you find modern now electrical in a hardware store, they're...
And it's not a big shock. I wouldn't get a big shock from a wall outlet, would I?
Well, you don't want it anyway. I mean, either way, you're correct. It's not a big shock, but it is if you're not expecting it. So, you try and avoid it. It's not something that that you would look forward to having.
Thank you very much.
See, if I could add one thing, you could do is have it unplugged and handle it and check it out before you plug it in, and even practice plugging in. You know, like I've got one on the back of my desk and I have like four or five things in it. You can unplug the power strip and plug those, your lamp, your computer, whatever, when it's unplugged, and feel more comfortable with it before you plug it into electricity. But as long as you're not handling it with your hands wet, and as long as you're not putting your hand on the little metal prong when it goes into the wall, then you'll be safe.
Yeah.
Also, many of the surge protectors have on them a switch to turn off the power to the outlets. Right. And all you have to do is flip the switch off to off and do exactly what Liz said, and then you can switch it back on. So you're not going to get shocked.
I can practice.
Yeah.
Okay, thank you.
But don't be afraid to try some things, because if you can't see the prongs on an outlet, you do have to feel them somewhat with your finger. So, you know, using your finger to find, like, if you're looking at a standard outlet, it's got two prong or two two slots in it. Well, obviously you need to know where the left one was, so you, maybe you're holding your finger
right by
that slot, and then you're putting your other finger on that prong, the left prong of the plug itself. So, you know, don't be afraid to touch things. That, you know, it's just like anything else, you know, be cautious, but don't be afraid to try it.
Right. Well, some of the plugs that you plug in horizontal and some they're are vertical, you know what I mean? And that's frustrating too. But thank you very much. I think I told you about myself long enough.
Well, most things are, don't be afraid to try it.
Okay.
You know, that's what gets most people, is they just never get started because they keep coming up with the reasons why they can't do it. And,
Mark,
you know.
Did you ever run into this one? This is Joe in Arizona. I live in an apartment complex. And I asked the maintenance guy, why was water dripping from the fan in the refrigerator? You ever run into that one?
Dripping inside the refrigerator?
Yeah.
A lot of times,
the little fan is,
yep,
the water was dripping down.
Yeah, sometimes that can lead because of clogged filters, that if you're not getting proper air circulation and stuff like that can happen. That can happen in your house. It can happen to you in the house too when a lot of people think they never have to replace air filters in their house. They should be changed fairly frequently. And if you don't, just by reducing the airflow in the house can cause a lot of condensation problems.
Well, actually, what it was, I asked the maintenance guy and he couldn't answer it. So I followed your idea and I went on to YouTube. And fortunately, there was written description as well as spoken. And it was that the drain from the freezer was clogged.
Okay, yep.
And it was feeding that water down into the fan somehow. And so I got a really good description on how to take the freezer, the inside panel of the freezer off, and remove the styrofoam that was behind it. And I looked, and there was, I fell around anyway, and I found ice.
Yep.
In the like a little collection area there. And it had said, well, extract the water that's in there out, then pour boiling water into it and see if that would clear it. And by gosh, it opened right up. And I put everything back together and haven't had any drip of the water yet.
I just want to congratulate you for taking that on, because as you know now, there was no reason you couldn't do it. Most of it is having a project that needs to be done and just having, I've got to get it done, so let's just get to it. Many people just sit there and wring their hands too often and never get around to taking care of the problem.
Well, my fortune is I have engineering in my blood.
Me too.
And so I enjoy being confronted with situations like that. They say, okay, blind guy, figure this one out.
Yep, and as you found in this situation, many times it's a fairly simple solution to it. Talking about that clogged drain line, that's another issue that you can have with an air conditioning unit on your house. Sometimes the air conditioning unit's not working properly, and it's nothing more than the condensate line has gotten clogged. That happens very, very regularly. And sure, you can call the air conditioner guy to come fix it, but be prepared to pay several hundred dollars for him to come out and spend, 5 minutes clearing a clogged line. So something that can be done relatively simple. So never overlook the obvious. Great questions.
Do they have classes? Say if somebody wanted to go and learn how to do some little fixing, just small stuff like changing washers or like a basic apartment or maintenance. I know we got maintenance man or whatever, but sometimes but just little small tasks. Do they have classes where people get, because I know a long time ago at the Peninsula Center for Independent Living, they had apartment maintenance, and they showed us how to change the washers and different other stuff like that. Do they have classes like that now where people can just go and just do learn basic stuff?
Some places do, and that's just something that you have to ask around. Once again, going back to the stores like the large Home Depots and Lowe's, even your local hardware store, the downside of that is we've become somewhat victims of all this information that's out there. And now, as you know, there's, you know, when you want to talk to somebody, there's no 800 number to call anymore. You got to go on a website. So that's what's happening in many things. Instead of having the classes, they now have YouTube videos or classes that you can do online. So, you know, that's a place to look as well. But I wouldn't be afraid to ask. Just, you know, when you go into a hardware store or a place like that, just ask, you know, do you have things that, you know, people can come and take a, you know, couple-hour class on a Saturday to learn to do minor things around the house?
Right.
It's a bigger issue than some people want to think, because there's so many people that are in that situation where they can't afford to have somebody come and do the little minor things around the house, but they're just not sure about how to do it. So there is a big market for it. And, you know, if enough people are asking, I'm sure the classes would be offered locally.
Right.
The National Library Service also has a few books that carefully describe how to do some home maintenance.
We have Judith hand raised.
This is Judith.
Okay.
How are you?
I'm okay. I just wanted to comment that I noticed that owner's manuals are sort of seem to be going away, and I don't know, or if they are available, they come in different languages when you buy something. If they don't come in different languages, they seem to be really focused on pictures of how to do things. Do number A, number B, number C.
Yep.
And I think, you know, right. I'm thinking that, yeah, and I don't always understand what the pictures mean. And I mean, I can see something, you know, and I'm just wondering, I'm thinking it's because I watch some of the technicians at my house, and they're always taking pictures with their phone or looking at their phone. And I'm just wondering if they just don't know how to read. Is what I'm starting to think.
Well, that may be. And what you're finding with owner's manuals, it's not uncommon these days when you buy a product to not have an owner's manual with it, because the owner's manual is now online.
And they you have to print it off
and pull it up that way. And you're correct that many things they give you pictures now as opposed to words. One of my pet peeves has been sometimes when you do read an installation guide or an owner's manual, you kind of wonder, has the person that wrote this ever done this? Because quite often the instructions aren't exactly what you needed to finish the product, or you'll finish the job and there's a part left over that they never mentioned.
Yes.
So sometimes I think that's why they put the pictures in there, so you can kind of not only read the instructions, but take a look at it too, and maybe it makes a little more sense. But you're absolutely right. It's a hodgepodge of what information that's out there now. Just so much is now online. And it makes sense for them. They're not having to print manuals anymore. And if they need to update things, they can update it online. And then everybody's got the latest version as opposed to, well, you have the old version. So you understand it from a manufacturer's standpoint, but it can be a little frustrating on the consumer end.
Yeah, and I think a lot of stuff is global now. So if they're not printing something in a bunch of different languages, they're assuming that whatever country you're in, you can look at the photos, the pictures.
Well, and something else that's happening now, and this is a function of AI now becoming part of our world. There are so many things that can be translated into different languages on the fly.
And I will
mention something else that I've started using more and more lately. There is an app on our phones now called Be My Eyes, and you may be familiar with it. A few months ago, maybe as much as a year ago, when you used Be My Eyes, you called and you got a volunteer on the other end that was using your camera to look at what you needed, you had questions about. Well, now there is an AI component to the app Be My Eyes, where you just snap a picture of it and AI actually describes what it's looking at to you. And when this first came out, I was probably maybe 6 months ago, I used it for the first time. I was totally shocked by the level of detail that it gave me. And I was expecting something very basic in a description, and it went into very, very detailed into, the color of the mounting bracket and how many screws were holding it on, and it was mounted to a gray wall and the neighbor's house across on the other side of the fence. I mean, it got into a lot of detail that I was not expecting. So that's just another, it's not a physical tool, but it's another tool to help you, analyze things and decide what you need.
Thank you.
Very good to navigate the world. Excellent. Musi, you have the floor.
I love that AI. I took on the bed, there was something in the middle of the bed, and I wasn't sure exactly. And it said cat in the bed. And then one time it was a blanket. You know what I mean? It's very, you're right. It's amazing how intelligent it is. It knew a cat from a blanket. And
Yeah, the first thing I ever took a picture of with the AI version of Be My Eyes was a rain gauge that I had mounted to my fence in my backyard.
I love
And
rain gauges.
I was expecting it just to say, it's a rain gauge. But it got into the, it's a glass cylinder with red markings on it, and it's inches on one side and centimeters on the other. And, it would actually read how much liquid was in the rain gauge. So it's, but like everything else, you have to trust but verify. So sometimes you need to have a rough idea of what the answer is going to be. So you know if it's giving you something that's just totally out there that, maybe you call back again and get a second opinion. That every now and then it does get stumped and it'll tell you something that's like, whoa, what was that about?
But yeah, it's very helpful.
This
I
is
think it's a
Liz.
great tool. I'm not afraid of artificial intelligence. I think it's just a tool. I mean, that's just my opinion.
Well, I think you're absolutely right. It is a tool, and some people will use it for good, and some people will use it for
I
bad. But
forgot about
it is.
that part.
It's a tool, and why not equip yourself? Just because you can't see things now, why shouldn't you be using the same tools that everybody else is using? But once again, you use it like you do any other tool. You go in it with your eyes wide open that, I have to pay attention to what it's telling me and judge in my mind, does this sound right or not?
I always take a step back and pause and think about it. You know, that's my philosophy. They used to say sleep on it. Now they say sit with it for a while.
There you go. Yes, we've gotten to a much faster paced life.
Liz.
Thank you.
I was just going to add, related to talking about the online manuals, I've actually used Aira, AIRA, which is a paid service, but I got a Dyson vacuum cleaner some years back that had a lot of different pieces to put together and called Aira. They looked it up online when they looked at the model number of the vacuum, and we went through every piece and read about it. So that's an option for folks that are wanting to go through those very picture-heavy manuals. You could use something like Aira as well.
Absolutely. That's a great tool as well. Like I said, there's a whole multitude of things out there available to us now. We just have to, make them accessible to us.
Other questions, comments? Anybody got a project that you're thinking about doing? Mark, you might want to tell people about building your porch.
Okay. Yeah, that's something. My wife and I live in an older house. We live in Richmond, Virginia, and the house that we live in just turned 100 years old last year. We've been here 15 years now, and when we bought the house, it had a deck on the back of the house that went all the way across the width of the house. But as it had not been maintained that well, and some of the boards in it were starting to show their age and look a little deteriorated. So I decided at some point I was going to replace all the deck boards, the surface that you walk on, just replace them and make it look a lot fresher and that type of thing. Well, as many projects go, when you get into them, they start expanding on you. And so not only was I going to replace some of those boards, but I ended up redesigning the shape of the deck a little bit because it had 45 degree cut corners and it had a couple step ups and step downs, which just wasn't making the deck as user friendly. It looked nice, and a lot of people comment on how nice it looked, but just the way it was laid out didn't work real well for furniture that we had and the usability of it. So I got into, redesigning the shape of the deck a little bit and that type of thing. But the other thing that I found when I took the deck boards off, the support columns that were underneath were rotted. So that was one project I wasn't planning to get into, but I was glad that, well, now that I'm into it, I'm glad I found out and I can replace them now while it's easy to get to them. Because in time, that would have presented a problem. So it was good to find it out when I did. It just added to the length of the project and, like everything else, added to the cost of the project. But, you know, when you're doing a lot of these things yourself, the cost is a lot easier to swallow because you're removing a lot of the labor cost that's involved in it. You're just now paying for the material. So if you've got the time to do it and it doesn't have to be done tomorrow, then, you know, once again, don't be afraid to take on some projects and see how it goes. And if you've never done that type of thing before, well, there's somebody that has. Don't be afraid to ask. There's all kinds of, you know, surveys where you can, you know, ask a question. There are apps out there where you can just ask how to, you know, how do I, that type of thing. And, you know, once you get into doing that, you get the satisfaction of doing the project yourself, but also save yourself some money and end up with a product that's exactly what you want rather than what somebody chose to give you.
And you were able to do that with accessible tools, so to speak.
Yeah, pretty much. Things that were on there, things, not a lot had to be measured to precise measurements. So a lot of things were just using something to, you know, transfer a distance from this point to that point. I developed a couple jigs or things that I did have to cut that if you're looking at using saws, there's typically a fence that you're using to guide your work, and so you can measure the distance from the fence to the blade. So there are, you know, little jigs that you can actually make. If it's something you're going to do repetitively, it's nice to have those jigs. It does take a little bit of time to make them, but once again, if you're going to use them over and over again, then it's time well spent. And what I found was there are a lot of things that are universal in nature. For example, the shoe that was on a circular saw, there was a certain distance from one side of the shoe to the blade, and then a different distance from the other side of the shoe to the blade. And those were consistent with, you know, this is exactly 2 inches. You know, this is exactly 4 inches. So when you start seeing that, those are dimensions that can be transferred to the work that you're doing. So if you want to cut something, what I ended up doing was screwing a guide board down and knowing when I was running the shoe next to that guide board, I'm cutting exactly 2 inches away from it. That way you don't have to see the line that you're working for. So that's another thing that gets a lot of people. When we lose our sight, you're thinking, well, I can't, you know, mark a line and cut to a line. Well, you're right. You can't see the line anymore. So now it's a matter of how do I make that line tactile? So it can be as a matter of, I said screwing a board down so that you've got something you can feel, or you can take a scratch awl and you can, you know, score a very thin line that you can feel with your fingernail. So therefore, you know exactly how far it is over to that line. Just once again, it's a matter of thinking a little bit outside the box. That when you're sighted, you don't think about these types of things. But when that gets to where it's not an option for you anymore, there are other ways to do things. You just need to think a little bit differently.
Joe has his hand raised.
And Mark, have you ever used finger measures and measure from your elbow to your wrist to your finger end of your palm out to the end of your finger?
Yep. A lot of times, that's what we were saying before. When you don't really need to know the exact measurement of something, a lot of times you're using something just to transfer a distance. So you don't care if it's 2 inches or 6 inches. It's just you need to know how, you know, what is how far is this from that?
Yep.
I was using the example before of, say, hanging a picture, and say you're trying to hang a picture between two windows. Well, you really don't care what the actual distance is between the two windows. You just want to know how far is it halfway. So if you take a, say, a string and pull it between the two windows and then double the string back on itself, that gives you half the distance. So then you can actually mark dead center between the two windows without ever knowing what the measurement is. The measurement's irrelevant. So just using things like that, once again, thinking a little bit outside the box. Now, I will caution you, you have to be a little careful when you're doing something like that if you're using a string that has some flex to it, because you can pull the string and it can have, so you need to find a little bit of a rigid string or something that's not going to have the give to it that some other strings may have. Sometimes you can use a piece of wire. That way it's not going to have any give to it, but it can still be used to transfer a distance from one place to another.
Yeah, just don't use a rubber band.
Yeah, exactly. Same thing as like a string that stretches. Yep, absolutely. And a lot of it becomes trial and error. You do something and you realize, huh, that didn't work too well. And then you think, well, okay, here's how I can do it next time. So don't be afraid to be creative.
You mentioned about, if you don't get it perfectly, very often, if you make an error, it's not the end of the world. You can usually recover a project over a small error of one sort or another, and very often it just doesn't matter that much. If you hang something that's kind of large and one end of it is maybe an eighth of an inch lower than the other end, most people aren't going to notice that. You know what I'm saying?
Don't get caught up in having to be perfect. Because once again, that's another thing that can paralyze a lot of people, is you just don't even get started because you're worried about it being perfect. And how am I going to do this perfectly? So I'm just not going to do it. You'll be amazed when you get into doing things, the things that you learn along the way. That for me is half the fun, is, what did I learn along the way, and what did I what kind of, say, a tool or whatever did I learn to improvise with to get the job done that I needed to get done that I hadn't even thought about before?
Any other questions or comments?
I was just going to say, I recruit over a period of about 40 years a toolbox, and you're right. As things come up, you just get more. I used to watch the techs, and then I would go out and get the tool that they used. So... Mm-hmm. So I would have it if somebody was here. I don't do it myself usually, but I'm glad a couple of years ago when I was starting to lose my sight, I went through that toolbox. I could barely get it closed. I had thrown so much stuff in there, and I cleaned it out and organized it and ended up throwing a bunch of nails away or whatever. I just didn't have a place to put them. But yeah, you can accrue quite a bit. It's pretty fascinating going in. For me to go into a hardware store, and I'm just fascinated by people that know how to do this stuff.
Well, to me, going into a hardware store is like going into a toy store. It's
just, yes,
And anybody who has any hobby, if people like to sew or anything like that, they have little gadgets that they've bought to use on their sewing machine just to make a certain project a little bit easier. So, this is nothing different. It's just a different project. And as Glenn was mentioning earlier, there's a lot of discontinued products or discounted things they'll put out on the table. It may be a one-of-a-kind thing that just hasn't been selling, but you may look at it and go, that's something I've been thinking about for years. I need that. I'm going to take that one home with me. That's how the toolbox grows.
It is very difficult for me to pass up the clearance table.
I understand. I'm not sure if it's a blessing or a curse, but yes, many of us are have that same problem.
Any other questions for Mark or comments?
We have about 3 minutes to five.
Oh, wow. Easter. Time goes by so fast. I really enjoy doing this. So thank you all for having me on.
I don't see any other hands raised or anything.
We're very close to the time. So, Mark, if there's no other questions, I just want to thank you for coming on once more. I know I impose on you and you always graciously accept, but we really enjoy your sharing your experiences and your information.
Well, as I said before, I'm happy to do it. I love talking about projects like this, especially with people that are excited about things and want to learn how to do it too. So, most of what I've learned has either been trial or error or talking to other people about it. So don't be afraid to just jump in and take on the project.
Very good. I think the train whistle says it all. We'll see everybody tomorrow.
Thank you for spending your time with us today. We appreciate your participation. For more information, contact President Glenn Crosby at nfbseniors@gmail.com or call 443-681-9345. We look forward to connecting with you again soon.